16. Surfacing. The freight elevator, unused for months, takes almost 20 minutes to ascend from deep storage bunkers kilometers beneath the sanctum. As it rises, it passes other storage levels, vast lonely halls haunted by silence that were once lined with rows of burnished war machines and stocks of munitions, enough to conquer a galaxy. But they have been picked clean, the cellars and reserves of the palace stripped bare by the siege. War has emptied the vaults, leaving dim rockcrete compartments so vast the entire human population of Terra could be contained there, sheltered from the surface onslaught. If only anyone had thought to do it. The elevator arrives, finally, with a shuddering clank, in a dispersal chamber adjoining the power plants that serve the House of Weapons. The chamber is also empty, apart from the abandoned freight haulers and exo-loaders that once handled the flow of armaments. They stand in the gloom like sculptures of orcoid beasts, their service to the war effort ended. Amber warning lamps flash briefly. The elevator's tripartite hatch whirs open, and the Coronis grav carrier rolls out across the chamber's floor, lifting a silent billow of dust. At other times, its arrival would have triggered security notices and brought sentinels to investigate, even though this vehicle is one of theirs. But no one comes. John isn't sure if that's because the Alpha Legionnaire has run scrap code exploits to mask them from the automated security systems, or because there is no one watching anymore. He isn't sure which of these ideas alarms him more. The Legionnaire brings the carrier to a halt and powers it down.
"Are we ditching this?" asks Dogent Crank, who has quickly come to like the well-armed and well-armoured reassurance of the Coronis.
"The mass passageways of the lower sanctum are more than large enough to accommodate a vehicle of this size," says Acte.
John looks at her.
"I have a feeling," he says, "that he's not going to like us arriving unannounced and knocking on his door. I know for sure he won't like it if we roll up in a tank."
John and Pesh dismount first, John with his kit bag shouldered. They walk away from the carrier, looking for signs of life, feeling the infrasonic thrum of the nearby power plants in the air. The air is dead and stale, as though circ processors have been shut down or set to conserve.
"The sanctum," murmurs John.
"Dispersal chamber 694, Pesh replies. "About 90 minutes walk to the throne room proper."
John glances around at the emptiness and dust wistfully. His face and ribs still hurt, then his mouth and chin are bruised and scabbed.
"Not quite the palace I imagined it would be," he says.
"It's a service area, John. A utility vault.
The formal areas of the sanctum are quite grand. You won't be disappointed. In fact, you may want to brace yourself."
"I was being sarcastic, Pesh."
"Ah.
You've seen them then," John adds. The formal areas.
"I've glimpsed them. Some of them."
"You damn Hydra. You'll find your way into anything, won't you?"
"It's why we were made, John."
"Well, my hat's off to you, Pesh," says John.
He sets his kit bag down and rummages inside it to check he has everything.
"You did exactly what you said you'd do. You got us in. Into the sanctum. Nigh on half the galaxy is trying and failing to do that, including several of the most gifted and powerful Primarchs. You showed them, eh? Devil Lupercal should have put his money on the Alpha Legion. I guess that's why Erda sent you to us."
"I suppose so."
"Well, anyway,"
says John, rising to his feet with a slight wince as he braces his bruised ribs.
"My thanks. Sincerely. We literally couldn't have got this far without you."
He casually pats the Alpha Legionnaire on the chest plate, an almost affectionate gesture of comradeship. When his hand comes away, it leaves something behind.
"Don't move, though, Ingo," he says. "Not a muscle, please."
"What have you done, John?"
John raises a hasty finger to his lips.
"I wouldn't even speak if I were you. Seriously. Now it's set, it's acutely motion sensitive."
Pesh freezes. as much a statue as the derelict exo-loaders around them. His suit systems have already identified what John has done. The close-focus limpet mine, anchored to his chest plate, displays a small red blinking rune.
"Be resourceful," you said.
"So I'm being resourceful," John tells the unmoving giant. "I'm taking you out of the game, just like you told me to. Move, even slightly, and that thing goes off. But don't move, because I don't want you to die. Just stay there. Really, really steady. I know your kind knows how to do that."
He bends down, scoops up his kit bag, and reaches into it again. Behind them, the others are emerging from the carrier.
"I found a canister of them in that tank's storage locker," John says. "Same place as the Vault Volver. One of your caches, I think. Now, you stay put. I'll sort out the rest of this mess."
He walks towards the carrier. The others have all dismounted. All, the long companions, Leetu and Acte. The witch moves to meet him, her blind head cocked in curiosity.
"What's happening?"
she asks.
"What's Alpharius doing? Why?"
John strides towards her. He lets the kit bag drop, revealing the side damper in his left hand, and flicks the pod's casing open with a snap of his wrist. He's ready for it, teeth gritted. She isn't, and it's going to hurt her more anyway. Acte squeals and falls to one knee, clawing at her head. John puts the damper down just out of her reach, its soft blue light glowing at maximum, and steps back. He pulls the Vault Volver out of his belt with his right hand and aims it directly at her head.
"Stay down," he says.